Hello and welcome to this ICIS Energy podcast. As the dust settles on a memorable US presidential election, the world now awaits the takeover of Joe Biden as president in January 2021. Now, there's been a huge amount of analysis on where Biden's policy will sit on US oil and gas and his broader environmental strategy going forward, and then what effect this could have on the current and future US LNG market. Today, we want to pick that apart. I'm Ed Cox, Global Editor for LNG at ICIS, and I'm joined today by two US colleagues. Fazir Rahman is our Americas reporter based in Houston, and Ruth Liao is our Americas editor based in Seattle. Hello to both of you.
Hi, Ed.
Hi.
Thanks for joining me today. If we can start with you, Fazir, please. Now, we're getting some clarity on the scale of Biden's victory and what comes next. Can you tell us a bit about the impact this change could have on upstream energy markets and environmental policy starting from next year, please?
Yes, definitely. So on the campaign trail, Biden touted a 9-point clean energy plan with the overall goal of achieving net zero emissions by 2050. He also said while campaigning previously that he wants to ban new oil and gas leasing on public lands, which is something that President Donald Trump had reversed. This was something that Obama had put in place during his administration. So Biden also is kind of focusing on undoing some of the breaking down of regulations that happened during the Trump administration. He said that he'll add new methane pollution limits, but he stressed on several occasions that he's not going to call for a ban on hydraulic fracturing. So now that, you know, the election results have come in and his team is working towards the, you know, preparing for January for day one, they've released a transition plan and that highlights four key priorities for day one in January, and climate change is one of them. So we're seeing kind of the same message of achieving that net zero emissions by 2050. And basically the steps to get there.
Right. Okay. So it sounds as if the rhetoric is falling rather more in line with that we're seeing in other parts of the world. I'm sure from a US LNG developer's perspective, this will raise a question about any impact on upstream gas prices. If we're talking about potentially some curtailments in production. If I look at the forward curve, as the Henry Hub, I mean, it's resolutely below $3 after this winter for years ahead, which I guess is good news for US LNG sellers. But is there an expectation that this kind of policy shift could push prices upstream, or is it just too early to tell?
Well, there is definitely some talk about this, but it already, we need to remember that production is already forecast to decline this winter because of the current oversupply in the market and the low price environment. So production is already expected to scale back starting in the winter. And then tighter regulations could, of course, lead to higher shale supply production costs, and that could spur further reduction in associated gas production, which would actually boost prices. So on the domestic gas production side, there are further restrictions and regulations could actually lead to higher costs, to higher prices that could be achieved. And then on the LNG side, some have said that if that does lead to US LNG produced with fewer methane emissions, that may actually be a kind of a positive or something that makes it easier to market US LNG on a global scale, because then you could say that it's produced with fewer emissions than it is currently.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Fazir. A number of the developers involved in US projects are global companies, are in fact European companies that are, you could say, quite closely plugged in to the changing environmental rhetoric out there, but by no means all of them. Is there any feedback from oil and gas companies so far, maybe as to the impact of this election, or again, is it rather too early to expect that kind of feedback from the market?
Mm-hmm. I think it's still a bit early, but in this recent round of earnings calls, we did hear some of the majors make it a point to highlight their greener initiatives that they have going on. Shell, for instance, said that it's moving toward achieving net zero emissions by 2050 as well, or maybe sooner, which is the same timeline as Biden's plan. So I think it'll be really interesting to see what else companies say leading up to January when the new administration takes over.
Right. Okay. Thank you. And just one final question, Vazir. Obviously, the US does not exist in a vacuum, and foreign relations are absolutely vital to the success of new US LNG projects, particularly if you look at the US-China relations. Is there any indication that those relations could maybe improve, or at least could improve from a business perspective going forward?
Yes. So with a new administration, that could definitely lead to changes in the ongoing U.S. and China trade dispute. But the timeline for that remains pretty unclear. The recent Cheniere deal with China's foreign energy, that's the first commercial agreement since the trade war began. But that is also a non-binding agreement that still needs to be finalized. So I think there is expectations that there could be some changes in the ongoing trade dispute, but there's nothing concrete and it's not sure what Biden would do and how long it would take really to take effect.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, thank you, Fazir. If I can bring you in here, because you've written a lot about some of the challenges US LNG developers face in getting commercial negotiations, and also how important China is in that regard, or the lack of progress in Chinese commercial negotiations. I mean, what's your take on this change in administration next year with regard to US LNG developers, you know, trying to commercialize more deals?
Yeah, and picking up on what Fazia had just said, especially on Cheniere's latest announcement with Foran, you know, keep in mind that this is a non-binding HOA. Terms still need to be finalized before the end of the year, and it's only representing a five-year agreement. So it's not the same, level of magnitude that you would see for 20-year contracts that would be needed to underpin expansion problem projects. You know, this would likely be supplied from Cheniere's portfolio volume. And, you know, I think it does show that while China is very much a market that developers want to go after, the ins and outs of how the trade war can be managed with the new administration is going to be one that's going to be tested and watched. You know, I think for buyer like Foran, perhaps they think that, you know, to pay the tariffs on these 26 odd cargoes, you know, throughout the span of 5 years would be worthwhile given the kind of pricing that they're looking at. But, you know, long term, again, that's a bigger question.
Okay, so yeah, it's a long way from a 2025 year to 2.5 million ton deal that maybe some of the potential developers that are a few years behind Cheniere may be looking for. And I think we can say that an increasingly important element, regardless of the seller and the buyer, is the role of emissions in any term LNG deal going forward. And that's something we've certainly been looking at. Recent reports from Qatar's deal with Pavilion, it contains a commitment to reducing emissions there. We're hearing of more carbon offset cargoes being delivered globally, such as Total into China a few weeks ago. Where do US developers stand on this, Ruth? I mean, is this another potential hurdle for them in getting deals over the line? Or do you think the message is getting through about the role of emissions at this stage?
I think it's absolutely being paid attention to. You know, we saw in the last 2 months how there was literally the unraveling of the agreement between Engie and developer NextDecade. Their agreement for offtake, for Engie's offtake from NextDecade's Rio Grande LNG project was placed on hold because of the scrutiny that the French government had, given that the French government is a stakeholder in Engie. And ultimately, it was the convincing of environmental groups and, you know, opposition within the government against the potential emission impact of, you know, what would be considered fracked gas from Texas. So I think that was very much resonated within developers in, okay, how is this going to be played out? How can projects couch themselves in such a way? So, you know, NextDecade had put out a statement saying that they were going to be 90% offsetting their emissions using process technology. Sempra has also looked at collaborating with the Salk Institute for carbon capture and storage research. So this is very much a direction that developers need to take. But again, given how close that deal was with Engie, you know, we'll have to see how those efforts play out.
Absolutely. And France being a good example. But the EU Parliament in the last few days has just voted through to push for a 60% cut in European emissions by 2030 rather than the 40% previously. So things are gaining momentum all the time. And for sure, Europe is going to be a key buyer of US LNG. I mean, Ruth, those strategies that you've just mentioned, are they potentially going to delay US projects? Or is it something that you think these developers can work into their existing timelines?
I think it's a bit untested. For one, there's not any kind of consistency or transparency of the value chain that's agreed upon by developers. So, I mean, who's to say that you've got gas coming in from the Haynesville versus from the Marcellus versus from the Permian? And how can you account for emissions along that chain? And then how do you account for the offsets that would be created? Now, obviously, with companies like Shell and Total, and even from the Qataris, you know, they can show maybe expansive efforts in order to make that a little bit more neutral. But I just think that it's quite early in these stages to have an adopted industry standard.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can certainly say that probably the last 3 months, certainly this year, has been a major progression in this discussion as to how the market addresses these emissions across the whole value chain. But as you say, it's still a very, very diverse and not harmonized route around it, something we'll follow very closely. But just before we end, Ruth, I mean, the short term, ultimately, we can't get too far from that. What do you think is going to happen in terms of US LNG sales this winter? Are we going to see curtailments, cancellations? Are people making decent money? I mean, where do you think we're going to go the next 3 or 4 months?
Well, already, you know, we have seen production levels rebound to pre-pandemic times. And that's, you know, following the spreads that have improved to both Europe and to Asia. You know, now there has been a rise in charter rates as well. And that's squeezed a little bit on the margins when you look at maybe estimated cost of US LNG into Europe. But overall, I think the picture is much more comfortable than what we saw in the summer when, you know, spreads were really crossed into the negative. So it's supportive enough to see the rebound of LNG production. And certainly we're also going to be seeing the full realization of the startups from Freeport Train 3, Cameron Train 3, and then soon in the coming months for Corpus Christi Train 3 as well. So really, there should be the expectation that LNG exports will be rising. Now, whether or not we'll see that sustained beyond Q1, again, I think that's going to be a question on what's winter demand balance is going to look like, where will demand pick up elsewhere, will we see China demand realize this winter, and of course, how cold will temperatures get?
Yeah, thanks very much, Ruth. I fully agree with that. It's still limited margins, and I think the market still maybe favors Asia from the US despite the higher shipping costs based on that Asian premium. But also from a European perspective, you know, we've got 5 US LNG vessels coming into the UK in the next couple of weeks, which is a real increase. And I think that shows that when you have regional price spreads, the UK is a little bit more expensive than the rest of Europe, and where you have some bilateral capacity deals into UK terminals, that you can see things turn around pretty quickly. So I do think there's a lot of interest globally, and certainly from a European UK perspective, in understanding those US LNG flows in the short term, and interest globally as well in terms of where US LNG goes in 5, 10, 15 years in terms of understanding emissions and how that fits in with buyers' changing requirements. There's a lot to digest. We'll continue to cover this. Please, if you have any feedback for us or any areas you'd like us to focus on in future podcasts, please just drop us a line. And in the meantime, we wish you a good week and thanks for listening. Goodbye.